Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark millennial Ben. Presented by Brakes Plus. I'm just going to read this because it's directed at both of us, but I'll let you take the first hack at it. Guys, please take the thick orange goggles off and look at things neutrally. The Raiders' win last night was far more impressive than the Broncos. Also, the Raiders' secondary was so much better than they were last year against a former league MVP. Your take that it's obvious the Broncos will be better than the Raiders this year after watching week one is just comical and couldn't sound more homerish. Carr threw for 435 yards against a defense better than the Broncos. Your takes are total trash.
Well, it sounds like
Thank you, Raider fan.
Yes. Obviously, that's a Raiders fan. The game went into overtime, did it not? So you're going to get extra opportunities to throw the ball down the field. Oh, and by the way, you had Kenyon Drake, who was nursing a hamstring injury. And you look at Josh Jacobs, who had a foot injury, and he didn't really look like himself. So Carr had to throw the ball a lot to keep the Raiders in the game. So you can say that theory and that concept. And when you talk about the Raiders defense, or better yet, the secondary, how much better are they than they were last year? This is still a team. How many points did they give up to the Ravens?
27.
They gave up 27 points, and they gave up an explosive play to Sammy Watkins over the shoulder. So they may be slightly better, but it's not like the new and improved Raiders. And then looking at the Broncos, yes, what have the Broncos been like for the past 4 or 5 years? And then the last 2 years under Vic Fangio, not being able to win the game in September, quarterback play hasn't been that great. So, yes. Did Teddy have to throw for 400 yards? No. You just need to be efficient, don't turn the ball over, and show that you can extend plays and make something out of nothing. That's a whole lot better than that way I've seen over the past 2 years.
By the way, did you see this? The Raiders, who had that controversial first-round pick a couple of years ago, Cleveland Farrell?
Yes.
Where'd he go, like 5 overall?
Something around there. Yeah,
right around
the
there.
The top 10.
Was it fourth? Fourth. Fourth overall. Healthy scratch last night. Healthy scratch.
Well, when you have Max Crosby there and you have Yannick Ngakoue, it makes it really difficult. And once again, this is the pressure.
Yeah, your fourth overall pick, Kim. Well, find a role for him.
Well, you try to find a role for him, but if he's being outplayed by some other veteran guys, then you know it is what it is, and you're trying to put the best guys on the field. It's just unfortunate because Yannick Ngakoue didn't really finish the game because of a hamstring injury. But when your top player can't find a way to be active, that's a problem. But could it be something more than what we actually know that's taking place?
So the Raiders gave up 30 points a game last year. They gave up 27 last night. Let's slow your roll, Raider fan, about where this defense is. Okay. Now, Derek Carr, you don't need to tell me. I've always liked Derek Carr. I would love to have Derek Carr. I'd love Derek Carr to be the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. I'd have no problem with that whatsoever. But again, I saw a Raider team that, you know, they have Waller and he's legit, but are you that impressed by overall their pass catching core?
No, I'm not. I mean, when you look at every team and you say, well, who are the best players on the team? When you look at the Raiders, you're going to start with Carr, Josh Jacobs, right? And then it's going to be, you know, Darren Waller. When I look at the Raiders wide receivers, even with Henry Ruggs and his speed and being a top draft choice, you have to ask yourself, what have these guys done to become threats? I mean, you have Zay Jones. You have, other receivers.
Brian Edwards.
Yeah, Brian Edwards. But are these guys that the Broncos cannot contend with their defense? And then look at the Raiders' offensive line. It's still not perfect, right? It's something in the work. There's a process. But Derek Carr and his ability to move around in the pocket, That's the thing that saves them.
Are you convinced, while we're on the subject of this game, are you convinced Lamar Jackson... We got a Jackson 5! Is going to pass the longevity test. Meaning, is going to be an elite quarterback for the next 10, 15 years.
No. And the reason I say that, Mike, is because the Ravens have not done a great job of building a team around him, fielding him quality wide receivers. They have some young wide receivers there. They're banged up right now, so last night is not a true test. But unless these guys can come into form, it's going to be problematic for the Ravens because now Lamar has to take the game into his own hands. You put two balls on the ground, two fumbles. That's a guy who's trying to make something happen. And you don't want to put your quarterback in that situation, even though I know he has the ability to run. Give him some options outside other than, you know, his tight end, right? You got to do something more than just that. If not, now you put Lamar in a tough situation where he's got to pull the ball and run.
He ran, scrambled 12 times. I'm sorry. That's a ticking time bomb. Ready to go off. When you're exposing your quarterback to that many hits, it's just a matter of time.
It is
just a matter of time before this guy gets seriously hurt.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I mean, they've been decimated in their running back room by injuries. So they didn't really have too many running backs to hand the ball off because we saw Latavius Murray score a touchdown, but he's only been there for a short period of time. After, let's just say, you know, week four, week five, it'll be a little different. Now you have Le'Veon Bell. You have an array of backs that you can utilize so you don't have to put that much weight on your shoulders. But if they're not able to get anything going from a receiver standpoint or anything on the ground, then Lamar, you know, Jackson, his career could be in jeopardy because now he's taking too many shots.
Texter says, have you seen how Lamar is built like a linebacker? He will last. No. No, I'll say the same thing about Josh Allen. If you are asking your quarterback to continually run up into the line, up between the tackles, and take those kind of hits right in the middle. I mean, it's one thing if your guy's constantly running off on the edge. Like you watch Russell Wilson scramble. He's always off on the edge. You know, he's never really taking big hits. You're asking the Lamar Jacksons and the Josh Allens of the world, they're running straight up the gut. So why is it that we talk about running backs all the time and how their career longevity is like 3.2 years per NFL running back? Why? Because they're always getting hurt, right?
Right.
They don't have a long shelf life. Running backs don't. So when you're running Lamar Jackson 12 times and at least half of those are right up into the middle of the line of scrimmage, he's going to get hurt. It's not a long-term, sustainable 10 to 15-year model. That plus the fact he still has a lot of questions to answer about just being a pure passer.
Well, this is not an indictment on Lamar Jackson, the athlete, and his ability to be a quarterback in this league and throw from the pocket. It's just kind of highlighting the fact of if you don't have wide receivers around you, and your top wide receiver is your tight end, and Mark Andrews, that's a problem. If you can't create a balanced attack by having guys that you can hand the ball off to, Gus Edwards, gone. J.K. Dobbins, gone, right? It puts you in a tough situation. So if you're Greg Roman, you know your best athlete is the guy behind who's under center. And you know, like, if it's third and short situation, a goal line situation, usually you think you hand the ball off to your running back, but the best player you can get the ball to is a mobile quarterback. But also you expose that guy to being injured. That's why they have quarterbacks that fit the same bill that can make plays like Lamar Jackson. But let's not be mistaken. Lamar Jackson is a very talented quarterback. But if you give him weapons around him that he can utilize, like a Patrick Mahomes, then you make his shelf life that much better.
Cam Newton got hurt. Cam Newton got worn down. Cam Newton's what? And he's a lot bigger than Lamar. He's bigger and stronger than Josh Allen. Cam Newton is a freak, and he got beat up. He got worn down. So just if you're the Bills, you're the Ravens, be careful. These guys only have so many hits in them.
But this is where,
and the idea, and I got another one. Oh, well, Lamar Jackson knows how to avoid. Are you kidding me? Did you see some of the hits he took last night? You don't continually run into the middle of the line and just not get touched. He got trucked a few times. He fumbled twice. I mean, you know, this idea that, well, he's elusive. You know, he's like a ghost out there. You can't tie. He fumbled twice. Once in the fourth quarter, once in overtime.
This is where, as a mobile quarterback,
Texas. Raise your game.
You have to be knowledgeable. This is where Cam fell into that trap. Hey, I have a big body. I can run over guys. I did this at Auburn. It worked for me early in my career. The idea is to take on more of a Russell Wilson type of frame of mind. I'm not a big guy.
Mr. Unlimited.
That's right. And he's not taking those shots like that. He's very smart. He's very calculated. So now all the mobile quarterbacks, Kyler Murray, Tua, Zach Wilson, Josh Allen, we know you can run with the ball, but can you be smart with it as well? We saw what happened with RG3. Very mobile, athletic quarterback, but then he didn't even know how to slide. He didn't know how to fall on the ground, Mike. I mean, I can walk and trip out the door and fall, but he didn't know how to fall. So you have to be smart. I mean, looking at some of the things that Teddy did in the game on Sunday. He's not as fast as a lot of these guys, and he had that horrific knee injury, but get the yards, fall on the ground. Now, he couldn't keep his helmet on. I don't know what's the issue with that, but the idea is do not fall in love with this idea. I'm a big quarterback. I'm strong, and I'm going to run over guys. Get the yards, get out of bounds, fall on the ground.
You wanted to say something about the Broncos' offensive line.
Yeah. When I look at the Broncos offensive line, they didn't give up any holding calls, which was great. And we didn't see any kind of regression in the development of Garrett Bowles, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
You only give up 2 sacks. But here it is. Let me pull out my fancy sheet here with my writing.
Whoa.
Need our handy dandy.
Can you see that?
Hold on a second. What was that noise you made earlier in the show when I was like trying to rub the bleariness out of my eyes at 6:01?
Can you see that?
No.
Wait a minute. If I put it closer.
We didn't have great eyes.
That is some of the tiniest writing I've ever seen in my life. Very neat, but yes. Tiny.
Yes, it is very small.
And you are clearly a guy who took a lot of notes as a player, and you just didn't want to be carrying around a ton of notebooks and paper, so you wrote really, really, really small.
Yes, I did take a lot of notes, and what I have here.
You have even better penmanship than the great Sandy Clough, a notorious.
Let it go, man.
A notorious note taker.
Bow chickabella.
Yes, yes, me and Sandy with our meticulous note-taking. Yeah. But the Broncos, I'll say 2 sacks, 7 hits on Teddy Bridgewater, and there are about 10 hurries in that game, right? And even though there was only 2 sacks, if you're Mike Munchak, you're looking at this stat line and saying, well, we need to do a better job. And I don't want to pile on because I know Graham Glasgow is dealing with a irregular heartbeat. But, man, did the Giants find someone on that line was a weak point and they really worked him. I don't care if it was Dexter Lawrence, Austin Johnson, Leonard Williams. They were just lining up over Graham Glasgow and driving him in the lap of one Teddy Bridgewater, which raises the question for me. Is this the fact of Graham Glasgow kind of missing a step, not being the same guy, you know, not being sharp, or does this have anything to do with the regular heartbeat? And if it has anything to do with the regular heartbeat, you have to do what you have to do as a Broncos organization to protect the player, but also protect the quarterback, whether it's Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater, because you can't put your quarterback in this situation. So that is something that they're definitely going to have to address.
Well, I always felt that Glasgow was just kind of regarded as a temporary Band-Aid, that they never viewed him as the long-term solution or the end-all, be-all answer for what they want at right guard. I think from the moment they got him, they were looking to find somebody better. I think that's been evident in what they've been doing over the last couple of years, right? I mean, with bringing in Netanyahu Muti and
Quinn Miners,
you know, the idea that this guy can be replaced and should be replaced, should be upgraded.
Well, that's the thing that you have to come to grips with, whether you're a coach or you're a GM. At what point do we rip off the Band-Aid and say, okay, well, we've gone as far as we can go with this. And in this case, once again, I go back to basketball. LaMarcus Aldridge, he left the Brooklyn Nets last year because he had a heart issue. I think he's looking to return.
But
at the same time, is this an issue we have to really worry about and be stressed about? Not because how it's going to affect our team, but more importantly, how it's going to affect Graham Glasgow. That's the first thing that I feel as a Broncos organization need to look at. But then after you move past that, okay, well, is it the best thing for our team to put him out there? Is that going to be a detriment? When teams start putting the scouting report together, are they going to say, well, here is the guy or here's the side of the ball that we can put our best defensive lineman here, and he's going to be disruptive in the pass game and the run game, and that is going to be the case. And we're trying to get the Broncos on the winning side of things, right, Mike? That's what we're trying to do.
That's what we're trying to do.
You got to start thinking about, is it time to make that move and put someone else in that guard position?
You can check out my latest column at denverfan.com, in which just kind of wrote observations of the week one win. And I hope...
I wrote a blog.
I wrote about this. I hope and pray 36 passes, 28 runs, that Pat Shurmur, maybe just maybe, is set to call an offense for what's good for the Broncos and not for Pat.
We were actually trying to throw incompletions.
Do you think he has had his aha epiphany? First, from the standpoint, hey, I'm not going to be a head coach anytime soon. So let's give that up. And let's stop trying to put together this showcase, explosive, Sean McVay type offense that gets, you know, old owners all excited and I get another job again. Has he put that completely aside and is all in on the idea of putting together game plans for what's best for the Broncos?
No.
You don't think he is yet?
No. Because here's why I said that.
What you saw on Sunday wasn't evidence of that?
Well, it was still, for me, Pat Shurmur saying, I still want to show this league I can be a head coach in this league. And the only way he gets to that point by having an offense that can put up points.
Right.
Right. So we saw more points on the board than we've seen over the last two seasons, average for the Broncos, because the Broncos wouldn't typically average 16 points a game. So what we saw from Pat Shurmur, which I was hoping to see, is that now he can open up his playbook a lot more than he could before. And everyone was talking about, well, Drew Lock was done a disservice because Pat Shurmur wanted to run, you know, 11 personnel 3-by-1. And that didn't cater to, you know, Drew Lock's skill set. Well, everyone's running 11 personnel, maybe 60, 70% of their offense. But now he's able to open it up, do certain things, also throw out 13 personnel, 12 personnel, do things that he couldn't do last year because he didn't really have the type of quarterback to do that. So now,
but despite not having that quarterback, I thought he put an unfair burden on that quarterback, that quarterback wasn't ready to carry. And what I saw Sunday was a offensive coordinator who was trying to mitigate, lessen the burden placed on the quarterback's shoulders. More of a commitment to running the football, and also bolstered by the idea that he has two running backs that he believes in, that he didn't believe in last year. He didn't believe in Phillip Lindsay. Didn't trust Phillip Lindsay to be a three-down back. He now feels he has two three-down backs that he can rely upon. And I got the sense that it was a different Pat Shurmur. It felt like a different Pat Shurmur. It didn't feel like a different Pat Shurmur.
No, it was, but it was still the same Pat Shurmur for me for a little, because knowing as though in order for him to get to where he wants to get back to, which is being a head coach, he needs to make sure that this offense is continuing to stay in some kind of rhythm and a flow. And you're right. We got a different Pat Shurmur from a belief standpoint. Now I believe in both of my backs, opposed to only believe in one of my backs. I don't really believe in my quarterback, but I believe in a quarterback this year that I can do, call certain things with him, and he can make certain throws. But more importantly, as I said before, we saw Teddy Bridgewater, you know, 7 hits, 10 hurries. He had the ability to improvise and make plays. And sometimes as a player, you have to have the ability to overcome coaching or some deficiencies on your offensive defense, and Teddy absolutely did that. So we are seeing some different things from Pat Shurmur, seeing him have a different philosophy, or as I would call it, the Patty LaBelle type of syndrome. I have a new attitude, right? So now hopefully we will see a more savvier Pat Shurmur as we move forward, and he starts to open the playbook even more from week to week.
All right, one other little nugget from my column. Feel free to disagree with me. I wrote a blog, but I wrote, Draymond Jones is the best player on the Broncos defense. Heck, maybe the whole team that no one's talking about.
Yeah, I dive a little deeper into that when you say the best player. Is it best player that no one's talking about?
That no one's talking about.
Okay.
Maybe the best under the radar player on the Broncos.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Because I've seen some changes going back from what we saw last year when he had a limited role and limited reps to a guy who's now been inserted to the starting lineup, and he's trying to make the most out of opportunities. And sometimes, Mike, when we look at the stat sheet and the box score, we're looking at, well, what guy had pressure, sacks, and things of that nature. Sometimes what we don't account for is how effective a guy can be, even though he did not show up statistically. I mean, Draymond Jones was getting a lot of pocket push. And sometimes that pocket push will lead to other players making plays. They have yet to come up with a stat for that, right? But this is what I look at when I break down film to say, okay, well, what other ways can a guy actually impact the game? And Draymond Jones is doing actually that.
This text comes in talking about Graham Glasgow. You guys made him a top-paid guard. That's an expensive Band-Aid. When you're desperate, when your offensive line, to even call it a patchwork offensive line, isn't even appropriate, it's worse than that, then yeah, you're going to find yourself when you're that kind of team and that kind of situation, that kind of offensive line, where you are sort of bidding against yourself and you are overpaying.
This is really my fault.
Because you are that desperate to fill that hole. But I don't think they ever signed Graham Glasgow with the idea that he was going to be the end-all long-term. Right from the get-go. I mean, I remember talking about it with Stink. I said, tell me about Graham Glasgow. He said, solid player. You'll notice most times when you watch him on tape, he doesn't dazzle. But he won't get you beat. Wins ugly. Is basically what he said. Okay, to me, that's a nice Band-Aid. That's a nice fill a hole on an offensive line that is completely leaking. Let's fill a hole with a solid guy. Maybe we're overpaying for it. It's like Melvin Gordon. Did they overpay for Melvin Gordon? Sure, but they had a need. Did they kind of bid against themselves? Probably. Did they overpay? Yes. But when you're down like the Broncos have been, you're trying to desperately fill some holes through free agency, and the nature of free agency is you're always going to overpay.
How'd that work out?
Well, the idea is desperate times calls for desperate measure, but I would always say it makes people do dumb things, right? And that means overpaying for players because you're not that great. You haven't drafted that well. You haven't really developed guys that well that you brought in from free agency.
Obviously, they haven't won here in 5 years.
And yes, it was an expensive Band-Aid. Absolutely. But what are you going to do? On that right side, it was Glasgow and Juwan James. You were hoping that would develop into something, and having Glasgow here will allow you to develop guys. That never panned out. So we have to now move forward. And expensive Band-Aid, yes, but I'll call it this. Basically, what the Broncos did was they saw a hole and applied Flex Seal, right? That's what they did. They applied Flex Seal, hoping that it would actually hold, like the commercial said that it would hold. But right now, it's starting to show cracks and flaws on that side at the right guard
Benny
position.
Benny doesn't know this, but as soon as I say it, he'll get the soundbite ready. You know who was the major spokesman for, was it Flex Seal? Flex Seal. Oh, maybe I'm thinking about something else. What was the one that Joe Namath did? Namath was a
struggling.
Was it Flexol? Maybe it was Flexol. Flexol.
It's probably Flexol.
Not Flex Seal, though.
No, what? No.
Hold on. Can I get some effing music here? Yeah, it was Flexol 454. What is Flexol 454, you ask?
Well, you know what?
It's a topical pain reliever.
Yeah,
you,
exactly.
you were thinking more of like a sealant type.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, a sealant. That's that's what Paxilish was supposed to be.
Oh!
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
I totally forgotten. Seriously. I think even Millennial Bennett forgot. Normally he's in my ear yammering away about you haven't smeared Paxton yet. Haven't smeared Paxton yet. He hadn't done any of that. But you saved the day. Way to go, man.
Yes, yes.
Day number what there, Benny? 2292.
How about that for some flex
here? We're closing in on 2300. All right. Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
More leftovers from the Broncos' big win on Sunday. Also, John Clayton will give us his take on the Broncos' victory, what it means moving forward. The professor will join us next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
That music can mean one thing and one thing only. John Clayton, senior Broncos writer for DenverFan.com, joining us, presented by Twin Peaks, Eat Strength, Scenic Views. Dick Ferguson in for Stink. John, good morning, and I'm looking at your column at DenverFan.com in which you write about Vic Fangio was all in on getting off to a fast start in 2021. What stood out to you about his coaching performance on Sunday?
Well, I mean, the big thing, it started in the preseason because it seemed like he went for every fourth down he possibly could, you know, two or three a game, and just trying to be aggressive and, of course, do that. And, of course, he was aggressive in getting, you know, some fourth down plays, trying to do that in the game on Sunday. So it's like you can see that, and it seemed like, that was all necessary because, you know, he's before this year, he had been 0-2 as far as being September wins.
0-7. 0-7.
Yeah, 0-7. Yeah, 0-7. And so it's like 2 years where he didn't get a September win. And so, you know, he's been aggressive like that and continued that. And I think it did help out. So I think that you can see being aggressive has helped him out. And of course, I mean, you know, sure, they're taking on a giant team that this team is better than, but also, I mean, this is the first three games, I mean, this was going to be the toughest game. So I just think the fact that he's been aggressive and continue to be aggressive has helped him out in getting off to this fast start.
Teddy Bridgewater was highly criticized once the Broncos decided to make him their starting quarterback. From what you saw on Sunday, should people start to look at Teddy Bridgewater a little differently?
You would think so, yeah, because, again, he was very efficient. And that was the big thing because, I mean, what you look at is that he didn't make mistakes. I mean, certainly, I mean, he was able to try to run around and, you know, not get rid of the ball. I mean, I think the one thing has to be a little bit of a concern because he held the ball for like a little over 3 seconds for a pass. You know, that's something that he's going to have to try to get quicker than. But I think the fact that you can see he was effective. I mean, he didn't make mistakes. He was able to, you know, do all the right things. And so I think that was very encouraging. And so it's like, he doesn't get much credit for what he does, but he's very efficient in being able to at least run an offense, not make mistakes, and do all the right things.
John, you know how it is. You've been covering this league for a long, long time. It's not just a Denver thing. It's in every NFL city. You overreact to wins. You overreact to losses. So how do you think Broncos country should properly frame this victory?
Well, I think the big thing is that, it's a win that they should have had because they're a better team than the New York Giants. But, it's also it's a win. And so it's like for, you know, at least a coach who had not won in September, I mean, that's encouraging. Now, of course, I mean, there's two games coming up against, you know, teams that only combined for like three wins last year, you know, taking on the Jets and taking on Jacksonville. So it's like, That's encouraging. But again, the fact that you know, this team can get off to a 3-0 start, I think, is very important.
John, we didn't see Bradley Chubb, but we did see healthy Von Miller for the first time in over a season. What could this Broncos defense possibly look like when you get both of those bookend edge rushers back together?
Really good, because, again, you got the best secondary in the league because with what George Payton's been able to do to add to the secondary. I mean, you could see it did a good job of stopping the run. That was encouraging. And then, of course, I mean, overall, I think that, you know, you take a look and you say this defense can be, you know, probably, you know, a top 10, top 5 type defense. And you know, particularly if they get once they get Chubb on the field and get him on the other side of, you know, Von Miller, then, of course, that's where the sacks start coming in. So that, I think, is going to be very important. But again, it's like, you know, it's like at some point, Bradley Chubb needs to get on the field and try to play with, you know, Von Miller, because, again, they should be one of the best combinations in football.
You know, for the last 20 years, Raider country has been, Raider Nation has been far more obsessed with the Broncos than the Broncos have been obsessed with the Raiders, just the nature of who's been better. But we're still interested in the Raiders. So what were your impressions of John Gruden's bunch last night?
Well, I mean, they still give up too much as far as on defense. You know, that's the one thing that doesn't that you know carried through like last year. There was times where they gave up over 30 points a game, and that. But I thought that they were effective as far as you know at least trying to run the football. I thought they were effective as far as trying to you know do some good things you know overall with the offense. But you know at least they were able to win, and that's I think the big thing. But you know they did better than I think people thought that they were going to do. So I think that was encouraging.
Well, when we look at the AFC West, every single team won in week one. Are we setting ourselves up for, I guess, anticlimactic, you know, finish come week 17?
Could be. I mean, because, again, when I started to scope this season out, you know, I had the Broncos and I had the Chargers both being wild card type teams, Kansas City obviously being a Super Bowl team. And now if the Raiders can continue to do what they did yesterday and win, then it looked like it could be a pretty dynamic division, maybe the second best in football. Our NFC West right now I think is the best in football, but no, I think it can be a dynamic division, particularly if the Raiders continue to show some success.
Well, I'm pretty confident in saying that I think the Raiders will end up being the worst team in the AFC West. Mm-hmm. You're based out there in Seattle. Who do you think will end up being the worst team in the NFC West?
I mean, right now, probably Arizona, but again, it's like still could be 8 or 9 wins.
Right.
And they get off to a great start by, you know, beating Tennessee on the road to open up the season. You know, what I'm worried about is San Francisco, because say what you want about San Francisco. Some people, you know, obviously everybody thinks that they can bounce back and do a lot of good things, and there's a good chance that can happen. But I still worry about the injuries. I mean, last year they had 131 missed starts because of injuries. I mean, you can see that they, you know, now they've lost, you know, their best cornerback and, Jason Verrett. You know, they've got two running backs, two wide receivers on injured reserve. I mean, you know, they've got so many injuries that keep mounting up that it kind of works against them.
All right. Great stuff, John. As always, check out John Clayton at DenverFan.com. Johnny, we appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
John Clayton, our senior Broncos writer for DenverFan.com, presented by Twin Peaks. Eat, drink, scenic views. How much should we put any stock in what happens week one? Good or bad? Is week one in the NFL season, especially the way more and more the really hands-off, laissez-faire way that teams approach the offseason, the preseason, is week one and even more magnified now with a 17th game? Is week one, is it nearly impossible and unfair to draw any conclusions, positive or negative, when it comes to week one?
No, it's not, because we know we have 17 games. You have one less preseason game, and week one it always kicks off the season. It kind of gives us a litmus test of what the season could be like for a particular team and you want to go out and put your best foot forward because no team wants to lose the first game. Now, is it the end of the world if you lose the first game? No, but you are trying to set the tempo and you're trying to continue the fire stoked, right? So if you're a coach, and in this case with Vic Fangio, when you have not won in the month of September, yeah, you're going to put a lot of stock in it because now – this is, you're thinking, okay, well, this is going to be the ball that you push down the hill to generate that momentum and create that avalanche. But you can roll into Baltimore. You can play Pittsburgh, and now you have some momentum. You lose game one on the road in September against New York. You know what the narratives are today. Well, you played a New York team. They were motivated by their crowd. 9-11, you didn't play well. The whole thing of bringing George Payton in, it didn't work. You have a very, the most expensive secondary in the NFL. That didn't work out. The making the switch from Drew to Teddy, that was a catastrophe. So now you have a little momentum, and they have confidence. I mean, heck, Von Miller said it himself. I mean, he hasn't really felt this way in a while, and he hasn't felt this way since 18 was on the center. So that tells you a lot about Von Miller. Now, when guys go to the podium, they say certain things to toe the company line. But that comment alone said a lot about how Von Miller was really feeling that he's never voiced. And listen, I get it. It's only week one. We're not going to celebrate. There's not playoffs and Super Bowl, but it hasn't been this way in a while. Celebrate it by Wednesday. Move on because the players would have moved on as well.
I think you just got to look at that. There are some teams in the league where you have to make a big deal of it from week one on. There are plenty of teams out there. You think the Baltimore Ravens are sweating because they
no
they played a slot? I mean, John Harbaugh walked into that room afterwards and goes, "Guys, we just gave one away, kicked it away. Come on, we're better than that." And they know they're better than that. And over the course of 17 games, it won't be an issue. But you're right. That's why I said this was a must-win for the Broncos. You had to take all of the momentum that you built up legitimately and some of the stuff that you sort of artificially pumped up in your mind to create optimism for the season. In order for it to matter, you had to go out and win right away. And they did. Now they're in a position to go 3-0. And after that, yeah, we're going to find out if this thing is real or if it's a mirage, but at least they'll have done everything they can to put themselves into that position. And that's all you can do. Okay, we'll get one more segment, chance to get some more thoughts on leftovers from the game that slipped through. We'll do that next. Through some of the leftovers from the Broncos' victory over the Giants on Sunday. I don't know. Did you experience this last night? Were you guys on last night for...
No, we were on Twitch.
You were on Twitch. That's right, because you had the Monday night game. I was kind of bothered by how many people were sort of trying to poke holes in the victory. Like,
yeah.
You know, stop getting excited, guys. It's only the Giants. In fact, we're running a promo about my response to that. Come on. After all the losing of the last 5 years, and you get to come out and get a road win. Haven't been too many road wins over the last handful of years. You get a road win week one against an opponent that was playing a very emotional game for them, and you were expected to win, you were favored to win, and not only did you go out and take care of business, but you did so in really a commanding way. Why can't you be excited about that? Why can't you enjoy that? Why does it have to be, oh, it's just the Giants, wait until they have to play somebody real?
Because I have my suspicions about Broncos fans, some Broncos fans.
Oh.
And because...
Share that suspicion with me, please.
Yeah. And what I question is your level of Bronco fandom.
Huh.
Is it really real? Because over the past couple of years, no matter who's the head coach, who's in ownership, and who's the quarterback under center, we rooted regardless. Now there seem to be some kind of rules and guidelines now in place that, well, we're only rooting for this particular cause and we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. I thought we were Broncos country. Now, I expect these type of shenanigans from other fans, but not here in Broncos country. You have a coach, you have a GM, you have a quarterback, you have a defense, you root for them, and let's see how this thing falls out. I know things haven't been great around here in the past couple of years, so let's find something to celebrate. Let's not look at the win and pick it apart. When was the last time we celebrated a win in September? When was the last time we celebrated actually scoring more than 20 points? When the last time we actually escaped the game and no holding calls, no turnovers, right? So let's celebrate this win. Let's not go too high on it, but let's celebrate what this is. And if you can't do that and you want to poke holes in it, then I'll say you're not a member of Broncos country.
Well, that's a bit harsh.
It's not harsh.
No,
that's reality.
It's hard. But here's I think what it is. Here's what I think it is. I think that they're real fans. I think they're good fans. But like so many of us in this world today, I think we tend to have our beliefs, have our agendas in our lives.
But that's not a real fan, though.
Whoa. If you are of the belief this franchise will never get back to being a Super Bowl contender until they truly invest and find their quarterback, and as long as they continue to just trot in journeymen and unproven or guys that, you know, flash briefly in one other place and now they're going to really take off here, this fan base has been beaten down by that over the last handful of years.
And whose fault is that?
It's not the fans.
But whose fault is that?
That's the Broncos' fault. And that's the quarterback's fault. Not the fans' fault. So you can understand why, until they go out and do the things to fit the agenda that some fans have, and that can be based on the quarterback, that could be based on the coach, until that happens, you can see why people are going to be like, eh, not that impressive of a win, because it doesn't fit their agenda. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying I think that's what you're seeing here, is that you have a group of fans who believe and have been very vocal in their belief that this isn't the right coach or this isn't the right kind of strategy at the quarterback position. And until they do something that fits their beliefs, their agenda, with the coach and with the quarterback, they're going to be skeptical or maybe even downright hostile to what the Broncos are doing, even if it is a success.
Well, those agendas have been flawed because the Broncos have gone out and drafted a quarterback in the first round. Just so happens that the evaluation process on that particular quarterback wasn't where it needed to be. So that's why I said, that was a while ago. It doesn't make a difference. Did it happen? So hedging our bets on the fact that, okay, we are just one young draft stud away at quarterback position from being a Super Bowl contender, that's not necessarily true, because young quarterbacks come in and they have their issues. It's all about building a winning culture. That's what we're trying to get back to. Because you could bring a young quarterback in here, but if you don't have a winning culture, then guess what's going to happen to him? We're going to be talking about, oh, well, we that guy's a bust. And what D-Mac says, well, if you don't have one quarterback, keep drafting him. That's a failed philosophy. At some point, you got to get it right. So you got to be great as far as building a team culture, but more importantly, building a team. So George Payton is coming in saying, okay, well, I saw that blueprint. It did not work. So we're going to trash it, and we're going to throw it in the trash can, and I'm going to do something a little different. That's where we are. Are we not?
But my response to the folks that are poking holes in this victory, minimizing this victory, you can still have your beliefs that they still don't have the quarterback that can take them to the promised land. You can still believe you don't have the coach to take them back to a Super Bowl contender. You can still believe all that. You can still be highly skeptical of this team. But why can't you enjoy the victory?
Because you're bitter. You don't want to.
Because it's not happening on your terms?
Yeah, and those terms are, it's not happening with Drew Lock. A lot of fans that I've seen react and I've spoken to out in public, it has a lot to do with that.
Really?
It's not their guy.
Because I'm on record. I believe that they'd be better off playing Drew. And I don't really see the point in playing Teddy. But I'll tell you what, I am more than willing to be won over. And if Teddy keeps putting together performances like that, I'll be first in line, hand up to say, wow, I didn't see that coming. This is awesome.
But here's the worst part of it, right?
Good move.
Individuals are out there looking for waiting for the other shoe to drop. They can't wait for this team to stumble. They can't wait for Teddy to fall on their face so they can go, aha, see, I told you.
Well,
so.
There's your agenda.
Once again, are you a Broncos fans or are you a Broncos fan with an agenda? So apparently there's two different types of Broncos fans.
Yeah.
Are there not?
Yeah. But I think we see that in all facets of the world today. You know, I'm a fan of something as long as it's what I believe in.
But Mike, that hasn't really been that way around here.
I'll support this Broncos victory if it's done on my terms.
But see, when I played, it wasn't like that. Right? You were either a Broncos fan or you were not. Now we are Broncos fans with addendums. Right?
Well,
addendums.
Wait a minute, real quick, before you head out of here. You were playing with Jake Plummer. Jake was never really embraced while he was here.
And that is a problem for me.
He wasn't embraced. Now, as time has gone on, history has been very kind and will continue to be very kind to Jake Plummer because of what we've been watching the last handful of years. All of a sudden, hey, you know what Jake Plummer did around here? That was pretty damn good. He won a lot of football games. He was exciting to watch. He was fun to watch.
Are you a Broncos fan or not? That's what it boils down to. Yes or no?
Okay. There are definitely a lot of agendas out there, though. There's no doubt about that. Enjoy the victory. And enjoy what should be the next two victories. Enjoy being 3-0. And then we'll worry about whether or not this team is legit. Plenty of time for that. Hey, thank you so much for filling in. Really appreciate it. Are you doing double duty, by the way? You on tonight?
Yes, I'm coming in tonight.
You. Six to...
No, that doesn't start until the 20th.
Seven to ten.
Yes.
With Cecil Lammy. Looking forward to that. All right, we got Chad and Nate coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.